70 in 7. A win today, Hockey O'Clock. Original.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird es jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Nee. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
It's 70 in 7. It is the great Hockey O'Clock original series about the life and especially the hockey life of player legend, coaching legend that is Greg Holtz. It's already part 6 of 7, so only 2 more parts to go. Where has time gone, coach? Incredibly.
Well, you tell me about that, Mark, because my 70th is coming up. Boy, that's hard to believe.
We're 2 weeks away from your 70th birthday. We already had 5 parts that came out in weeks past. We talked about your upbringing. We talked about you aspiring to become a hockey professional. We talked about your years in Austria becoming a player legend. We talked about the transition from you and your playing career to becoming a coach. And I don't think it's an understatement to say that this will be the longest episode. I think this will be the juiciest, the meatiest of them all because of all the things that went down in the early 2000s. Basically, we're talking about you being aged 50 to 60. Also, because of the fact, or it's going to be the juiciest, meatiest because of the fact that you had your, by far, biggest success in your career, recording a championship with Villach. We'll get to that and so much more. But when we basically had a last chance to talk to each other here on 70 and 7, we were talking about the 03-04 year, the last final against Linz. And our big cliffhanger was, well, there'll be another final lost the year after against Klagenfurt. But before we get to that, when you look at 03-04 and 04-05, how did you, in between those 2 years, develop as a coach?
Well, my first year was 02-03, right? And we talked about that. And I almost got fired at the beginning. And I went in there with this mindset of playing attractive hockey, which normally translates to offense. So my way of thinking was 6-5, 7-6 win is way more exciting for the fans than winning 2-1 or 3-2. So was it the right way to think? Absolutely not. And I learned that pretty quick, and we did change. I changed quickly. And I know I had really good players too. So my job was really to keep the guys in shape, try to challenge players. That's what I kind of felt was one of my strong points. I could look somebody in the eye. I could find ways to treat each guy a little bit different, push the right buttons, or hopefully push the right buttons to make them a little bit better. That's what I really learned how to do. So we lost in the finals to Linz, so I had also won with the U-20 to go from the B pool to the A pool. So after a close call of getting fired, as you know, I somehow survived. I learned a lot. We lost in the finals, which was a pretty good success, still disappointing. So now I don't have a contract. How do I move forward? The season's over. What do I do now? Then I have to talk to management about the next year, which was 03-04.
Fill me in on those contract negotiations. How did they usually go? Was there a blueprint for it? You going like, okay, this is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. How did it work?
Well, as you know, my first year, and I've done different types of contracts over the year, as you remember. So
I still love the one where you had a cut of the Gates money and the attendance. Did that happen as a coach too?
Well, you know, that's a funny one too, but I kind of liked the one where I went and had two beers and I made an extra 10 grand. Now, those were two good beers, I tell you. But anyway, so what happened in the first year, my fixer was 30,000. Okay, I'm not going to talk about money past that. So that was not a very big contract for the time for coaching. So I did negotiate some bonuses because attendance was way down. And I did get a fan bonus up and above what they had for attendance the year before. I said, okay, if we get up above that number and then above this number, you guys are going to do well. I should be able to get a little percentage of that. So if you're successful, we're successful, you're successful, I should be a little bit more successful. And they agreed. So now we had a good year. The fans were good. So now that 30,000 turned into something more substantial. So now I go in to negotiate the next year. And here's my first conversation. I believe it was with Gruner. I did the first one with Gruner too. Okay, we were successful. Here's what I made last year with my contract and my bonuses. Should I be paid less in my second year than my first year? He said, or they said, no, you shouldn't. I said, okay. So now I based my fixum, so my salary, on my first year's total contract, which was a lot more attractive now. And then I think my bonuses were now not with fans. They became for positioning and for making the playoffs, making the semis, or maybe making the finals. So that's how I structured the second year of my contract. And as I told you, Martin, I always did one-year contracts. Reason being, if I'm not good enough, I'm not going to resign. I'm not going to sue the team for if I have a three-year. That's how I wanted to work. So I got my deal, signed my deal, and off we went.
The last time we had the chance and opportunity to talk to each other, we ended with what happened in spring of 04. Your second year as a Villach head coach, a finals loss against an up-and-coming Black Wings team that was loaded indeed. Even though you won the first game, you lost the next three, so gut punch right there. But it took some time for Austrian fans to be able to see you again on a bench coaching. What happened in between the finals loss in 04 and you not having a job at the beginning of the year?
Okay, can I just touch on before the playoffs in 03-04? I said to the team, we were in the weight room. That's where we have our meetings. It was quiet. And I said, guys, I was pretty tough as a coach, I think. And I challenged guys. And, you know, some guys used to maybe bitch and complain or go to Joe Meehan or whatever it was. So I said, okay, I don't want to stand in anybody's way or having an excuse that they're going to use me as an excuse if they don't play well. So I told the team this. Guys, after this year, after this playoffs, after this year's over, I am leaving Villach. I do not want to come back because I do not want to stand in one player's way. Do not use me as an excuse if things don't go well. I told them that. So now, boom, done. So we roll on, we get to the finals. What a finals it was. I know Tyrol, I know a lot of people were following this closely. Really pulling for Villach too, because Klangford, the record meister, whatever. So in game, we were down. We were down in the series too, and we came back. And I remember Pavel getting a couple of big goals. But we get the game five, best of five in Klangford. We score. Lansinger scores with 9 minutes to go. We're up 2-1. This is exciting. I put five of my best players on most responsible the next shift because the next shift after a goal is so important. one of my top guys made a kind of a funny drop pass normally that he wouldn't do. Cook, Velzer somehow got the puck, bang, bang. It's in the freaking net. It's 2-2. Anyway, now we're going to overtime, back and forth. I think in the 17th, 18th minute, David Schuller scored a really beautiful goal. Klangfurt wins. Disappointing. Season's over. Another great run. But we came up just a little bit short.
So that's where, Coach, sorry, that's where I have to correct myself, because I asked the wrong question. You lost the finals against Linz in 02 and 03. That was a loaded Linz team. And the year after, 03 or 04, of course, was against Klagenfurt. And oh, by the way, hate to correct you, but I know it seems like an eternity on the bench, but Dave Schuller's game-winning or championship-winning goal was scored in minute 66. So what appeared to be 18, indeed were only 6 minutes. But I guess heartbreak. Leading the decisive or deciding game until 9 minutes before regulation ends, and then losing out in overtime on that coveted championship had to be a gut punch.
Well, of course it's a gut punch, but that's how close it is. Like, I mean, Klangfurt was a very good team too, so it was just that close. And every little mistake you make is so close. It could be a coaching change. It could be a player, a turnover. It's such a fine line. But they won fair and square. It was a really good year, exciting year. The fans had a great time. Relatively successful, the Verein. We had lots of fans. So now the season's over. And we have a meeting. I have no contract. Nobody has talked to me. But I also remember what I said to the team, and that was also the management knew what I had said about not coming back. So we had a meeting, but now I think it was Peter Raffel and Secchi were kind of behind me to come back regardless of what I said. And I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but they said, they got to bring you back because you've been in the finals twice regardless. Okay, we got to run with this again. So we had a meeting in the VIP room, all of the press, the management. I was standing with Peter Raffel and Secchi. And one of the head guys started speaking and they thanked me for the 2 years I had put in. And we wish you all the best in the future. I remember Secchi just shaking his head. He walked out. Peter Raffel, I'm not sure if he left, but he was kind of shaking his head too. So I left. That was it. Goodbye. So I packed up my car, went back to Tirol to see my kids.
Wow. I mean, how did that feel? How long did it really take you to understand what had gone on there?
Was I surprised? Yes and no. Martin, you get used to stuff that happens as a player. Fans spitting on your stuff. One time they were going to send me home because I had some bad games in Innsbruck. They're going to send me home by boat. They weren't even going to fly me home. Innsbruck, after all those great years, they don't even say goodbye. Retire my number and basically see you later. Yeah, you get used to the stuff. Nah, I said, okay, let's go. I'll go home, see my boys. That's good. That's one positive thing. And I'll see what comes next. You shake your head a little bit. You get over it.
Because the funny thing is, the team that just let you go was a team that brought you back on. It took some time up until January of 05, but eventually you made your way back to Villach. Just help me and the listeners fill the gap here. What happened in between?
Okay, so now, excuse me, I'm going to stay in Innsbruck. I'm going to coach Mike, my son. He was like playing Bantam Schuler. So I'm going to coach Mike and stick around for the kids, which is fine. Watch Taylor practice, maybe help out there a little bit. So I think they paid me 800 or 1,000 euros a month, which that's what it was back then to help kids. So Blair McDonald, BJ McDonald, had coached in the American Hockey League. He was a great player. I had played with him also. So I had a good connection to him. And he had won in the AHL with his way of coaching. So they bring him in. And Carrasco was the goalie there in Felak. And they were struggling. And BJ had a different way of doing things than I did, as every coach does. I actually talked to BJ two or three times in the first couple months of the year to try to help him out. You know, just, hey, play the young guys. Don't be afraid to throw them on there. I tried to help him basically save his job. This is factual. But it finally got to the point where they were going to make a move, which I didn't know about. It was around Christmas time, I guess it was. And I got a phone call. I think it was probably from Joe Bion. Greg, would you be interested in coming back? And I said, okay, well, what are the details? The contract was, you know, not that big, but it was second half of the year. But it gives me a chance to get back in because I do have to make more money because $1,000 a month is not cutting it. So I agreed. And I didn't have time, really. I had to make a decision, so I didn't talk to Innsbruck. They found out after, and they were pissed off at me. Can you imagine? They were pissed off because I didn't ask them if I could go. Like, I'm not going to swear here, but let me just leave it. So anyway, and I know BJ, so we got to look for a goalie. We got to, Praska's not good enough, A, B, C, D, whatever. So I went back with the understanding, like it was a six-team league, I believe, and we were in fifth or sixth. With the understanding in my contract, if we make the playoffs, I get another one-year contract that will be negotiated. They said, okay, now I'm back in Felak. And it was the lockout year, don't forget. NHL lockout year.
And we'll get to that, and we'll get to so many other things in more detail. But as we're probably starting to jump around a little bit right here, I probably want to take listeners back a little bit to maybe your earlier coaching days at Villach, because I think we concluded episode or part 5 of 17-7 with... or by hearing from Markus Kirschbaumer, and he at that time being one of your goaltenders said, you came in proclaiming you wanted to win games 7-6 rather than 2-1. And obviously that set off all the alarms with goalies. And it's just interesting to talk about development and obviously talk about the evolution that you as a coach undertook too. And there's something interesting that reached me from another one of your goaltenders, the four-time Austrian champion, Gerd Prohaska. He reminisced about the practices that you had and how wild they could be. For all the English-speaking listeners, again, bear with us. This is going to be in German, but I'll translate the gist of what you're about to hear. We'll quickly listen to what Gerd Prohaska had to say.
Ja, Greg Holst war natürlich ein Eishockey-Besessener, ein Eishockey-Verrückter. Und er hat sich, glaube ich, damals wahrscheinlich auch genauso wie heute 24 Stunden am Tag mit Eishockey beschäftigt. Und er hat auch immer sehr viel in die Trainingsplanung investiert. Und ich kann mich erinnern, ich habe eigentlich als Spieler nicht sehr viel mit meinen Trainern geredet. Das war auch bei Greg Holst so. Ich bin da einmal vor dem Training, es wird eineinhalb Stunden vor dem Training gewesen sein, bei ihm vorbeigegangen, bei seinem Kammerle. Er hat mich gesehen, hat gesagt, Pro, komm rein. Und dann ist er mit mir das Training durchgegangen. Und er hat gesagt, schau, erster Drill machen wir so und so, zweiter, dritter, vierter Drill, so, so, so. Er hat mir das alles genau, ganz genau erklärt. Für mich war das eigentlich eh viel zu viel, weil mir war das immer ziemlich egal. Ich bin ja nur im Tor gestanden. Aber okay, ich habe gesagt, passt, ich weiß jetzt, wie das Training ist, habe mich umgezogen, wir sind aufs Eis gegangen. Und wo ich, oder als ich aufs Eis gegangen bin Und bei seinem Kammerl wieder vorbeigegangen bin, habe ich gesehen, wie er seine ganzen Trainingszettel wieder zerreißt. Wir haben dann das Training begonnen und es war jeder Drill komplett anders. Das ganze Training war ein anderes und auch das war Greg Hurst impulsiv und bei seinen Trainingsvorbereitungen oder auch beim Training am Eis sehr, sehr impulsiv und sprunghaft. Und diese Seite, an diese Seite erinnere ich mich auch immer ganz gerne.
Well, first of all,
I got to laugh. It's so true.
I'll get to the nitty gritty of this message that Gert passed along in a bit, but I'll quickly want to let people know what was in there, especially our non-German speaking listeners. He started off by saying, "You're one of the hockey people who has hockey on its mind 24/7, or on his mind." And he says it's probably still true to this day. I can agree on that. That's still true to this day. And he said you were always trying to come up with good practices and good drills. And one time you let him know, even though he was a goaltender and couldn't care less, this is going to be the first drill that we're going to run, the second one, the third one, the fourth one. And after he passed your coach's room again, he saw you tearing up the practice plan and he called you kind of impulsive and just interesting to see how you were diverting from a plan that you originally had in a matter of maybe minutes and maybe even a few hours. How do you look back on that aspect of your coaching?
You know, it's funny. This is so true too. Because even when I work with the kids after, or even now, I will have two drills in my mind. But just like with the pro team, if I felt the passing drills that I was going to do with the mood of the players, I said, nah, I feel this is not going to work. So I would go to more battle drills. I would change sometimes. I'd have a third plan in my freaking mind because I could get the feel of the players coming in, how they felt, were they out the night before or whatever it was, were they a little beat up from a trip, something. So I would have a plan in my mind, but if I felt in the atmosphere something wasn't right, I'd change it. And if I started a practice with my original, and I saw the passing was off, we were sloppy, there was no talking, then what I would do, I'd change on the fly. But if I remember correctly, as I went along over the years, now Proske and Kershi, Davis, and the guys, the goalies that I coached, Mark Reich, Starkbaum, I believe as I went along, you talk about developing, I would have a couple shooting drills always to start. I'd put them on the board. But I would sometimes ask the goalies, okay, here's the two drills. Which one do you like better for you to warm up? I believe I did that because I wanted, I like that one, coach, because maybe it gives me a screen or whatever it was. So, but what Peraska said is very true. I could change on the fly. If it's not going well, or you got a bad vibe in the dressing room, change it. That's what I did.
Take us back to you taking over that Villach team in 04, 05. You started negotiating around Christmas. You took over for BJ McDonald in early January. What kind of Villach team was it that you took over?
Well, Davis was there now too with Peraska. We had Jason Krog came in or was there, Ethan Morrill, captain of the Oilers. After the fact, Eric Weinrich came in. I think what happened was I'd always go to the rink early, a couple hours before practice, and I'd be looking at video or stuff. And a lot of players like to go early. But I know BJ McDonald wasn't there that early. He'd get in maybe half hour before practice, have his practice ready or organize it when he got there. Didn't give the guys much time to kind of get organized. Like I said, every coach is different. So, well, we had a pretty good team, but we had, you know, we had to win a bunch of games to be able to move up to make the playoffs. And that's a hell of a story, that one. So I just got there early, had practices. The guys were great. And I do have a story about after Eric Weinreich came, about the NHL players. It's really interesting for young listeners and actually for all listeners about their respect for the game and their manners. So whatever you want to hear that part, just let me know.
Shoot. This is your series. This is...
Okay, so we bring...
Whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it.
Okay, so we got Ethan Moore there, big captain, really good player. Jason Krog, NHL. Nevis coming in from St. Louis. We bring in Eric Weinreich. I think he's 37 years old. Wealthy, great NHL career. I'm on the ice at the end of practice with the young guys playing a cross-ice game. He comes into the rink right from the airport, you know, jet-lagged, whatever. Knocks on the window. I open it up. Hey, Greg, I'm Eric Weinreich. Well, pleasure to meet you. Do you mind if I come out and skate with the kids? You know, it's called the love of the game. So he came out and we started going, this guy was a great player. So here we are. In the mornings, I'd be in my office. And the home guys or the other imports would come in. And I'd say, hey, morning, morning. They say, yeah, with the Morgan, morning, whatever. The NHL guys, this is so interesting. Nothing against the other guys. But Krog would walk in, or Morrow, or Eric Weinreich. They'd walk by my room. And I could say, good morning, Eric. Oh, good morning, coach. How are you today? The same with Krog. The same with Moore. Good morning, coach. How are you today? Just their respect for the whole situation and their manners was at just a higher level. Was that because they're in the NHL and they had to work that hard to get there? I don't know. But I never forgot that. And that's a story I tell a lot of young players. As we talked about in one of the previous episodes we did. You know, peer pressure when you're young, having good manners is not that high on the list. It is high on the list. Having good manners is a strength. And boy, when I saw those guys, how they acted and how they were, it was really refreshing. I'll never forget that.
What you probably also never forget is how the season unfolded, the 04-05 campaign, with a finish in a regular season for the ages. But before we get to that, I'd like to bring someone on who talks about the impact that you had on his career. And I'm sure you've impacted dozens, if not hundreds, of careers and trajectories. But this one, at this particular time, to me, seemed very interesting. It is, of course, Markus Kerschbaumer, now one of the best goaltending coach in Austria. He's working for Red Bull Salzburg. He came up with the hockey school for goalies in Villach, a program that brought out so many great goaltenders. But he was a player in 04-05 in a crowded goaltending room. He reminisces a little bit about the situation, about the team, and the impact that you had on his hockey career. We're listening to Markus Kerschbaumer.
In der Saison 2004-2005 war zu Beginn der Saison der Blair McDonald unser Head Coach. Und wir haben da sehr alte Mannschaft gehabt mit arrivierten Spielern, um nicht zu sagen, eigentlich schon Spieler, die weit über ihren Zenit hinaus waren. Wir haben einen sehr schlechten Start gehabt. Wir haben sehr viele Spiele verloren. Die Leistungen von Gerd und von mir waren auch nicht unbedingt die besten. Da hat es dann in der Saison dieses berühmte 8-11 gegeben in Villach gegen Salzburg, wo der große VSV gegen den Liga-Neuling komplett von der Rolle war. Daraufhin hat der Club reagiert und hat den Reinhard Ibis verpflichtet. Mit dem Reinhard ist es ein bisschen besser geworden, aber auch nicht wirklich sehr viel besser. Und ich glaube, zwei Monate später hat der Verein entschieden, dass es notwendig ist, einen Trainerwechsel zu machen. Und der Greg war back. Dadurch der Reini und jetzt bei uns war, ich war natürlich zu dem Zeitpunkt dann die nominelle Nummer 3 im Verein, war eigentlich sehr, sehr wenig mit der Mannschaft mit auf Reisen. Das heißt, ich habe die Zeit schon nutzen können, dass ich mit Nachwuchs aufs Eis gehe und mit seinen Daumentraining gemacht habe. Das war eigentlich immer schon meine geplante zweite Karriere. Und eines Tages holt mich der Craig ins Büro und fragt mich oder sagt zu mir, ich soll mal überlegen, was ich in Zukunft in dem Verein machen will. Und meine Antwort kam natürlich sofort wie aus der Pistole geschossen, ja, ich will Daumentrainer werden. Und er hat gesagt, ja, er wird mich da unterstützen und er wird das dem Vorstand vorbringen. Und es hat funktioniert. Und plötzlich war der Craig nicht mehr mein Trainer, sondern mein Kollege und Mentor. In dieser Zeit hat er mir sehr, sehr viel beigebracht, sehr viel Werte näher gebracht, die er im Leben lebt und auch als Coach. Und für das bin ich ihm unendlich dankbar.
He basically talked about the start of the year that wasn't good. The club had to react to the bad start brought in due to the lockouts. Reini Devis, things became a little bit better, but he was a clear number 3. And because of the fact that he didn't travel to a lot of away games, because of that, he already wrapped his head around starting to coach and become a goaltender coach. And one day you called him into his office and you asked him, hey, what do you want to do? And he said, well, I want to coach goalies. And you said, well, I'll do everything I can to help you succeed in that. And because of all the things that he learned from you, all the things that he did for him, he said he's going to be eternally thankful. Did you ever think about the impact that you had on other people's careers? How many people you mentored?
No, not really. But I remember I was never afraid to play young players, 16, 17, 18 years old. Raffles, Nico Toff, Yanis even. I was never afraid to play young guys because I always felt good young players that were talented and had something brought a great element to the dressing room and a great element to the fans. These home guys, these young kids, they were so exciting. They helped our dressing room and they helped the fans. But let me tell you a little bit about Kershaw, because now he's the third goalie, right? And as we talked about in the podcast with Peraska, I think last year in Phylac, BJ McDonald, great hockey player, very successful coach in American Hockey League, didn't feel Peraska was good enough. He didn't like Peraska, from what I gathered. And that's why they brought Devis in. They wanted stronger goaltending, which I thought Peraska was freaking great, even though he headbutted. But Kershaw came in, and I know, you know what he did? He used to get up at 6 in the morning, go do his job at the insurance, whatever you call it. Then he'd come work with the pro team after, and then he'd work with the kids. So if anybody deserves where he is now in his coaching career, it's this guy. And yes, he took it over, so now he became our goalie coach. The organization agreed. So now he's working with Devis and with Peraska. He's learning on the fly, even though he are, and he's getting better. And boy, he helped us an awful lot. So talk about, you asked me the question, do you feel I helped some guys' careers? Yeah, I remember I helped Thomas Raffa quite a bit when he came back from that experiment over in junior hockey. I know I helped guys. I was patient with certain guys. But Kershaw helped some goalies big time. And number one on the list is Starkbaum. When we brought him in as a backup, he had no job. And Kershaw made him a goalie. And that's why after that, you know, the storied career that Starkbaum had. That is the work of Marcus Kirschbaum. Bomber.
An interesting tidbit that he mentioned during his story is that the team was probably too old. A couple of players who had already had the best years or had them in the rearview mirror. How much would you agree with that? With that, what Marcus Kirschbaum said?
Well, we weren't the youngest team, but I can't remember exactly. But, you know, we had pretty good freaking players with Morrow there too, and Weinrich, and these fitting in, and Krog. But we did turn it around. And I remember Divas got hurt too down the stretch and missed quite a few games, and Praska took over. And he played freaking really good because I believed in Praska. And Praska did tell me a story one time. I think he said it at the podcast that we did. The first thing when I came back that early January, I walked into the room and who was sitting on the bike in the weight room was Praska. And do you remember what he told us? So I said, "Pro, hey, how you doing? You could be one of the best goalies in this freaking league." And I walked away, or something in that form. So I felt I could do that. And I believed that. I wasn't making this up. This wasn't a motivational speech. That's how I felt. But anyway, we weren't the youngest, but we were a competitive team. And we were working our way up now to getting in the playoffs. So four teams made the playoffs. And now we're getting close. We're coming down to the last couple of games.
Before we talk about the last couple of games, let me ask you about managing the goaltending situation. Now all of a sudden, you had three goaltenders. Divis, first and to this day, only Austrian goaltender to play in the National Hockey League. You had Gerd Praska, one of the all-time greats in Austria, four-time Austrian champion. And you had Marcus Kirschbaum, a solid backup. How did you manage the situation knowing that there are, of course, egos involved when you deal with great players?
Well, there's egos involved, big-time egos too, right? But I can't remember exactly. I think Kershaw probably practiced with him, but he became the goalie coach for the first team. So if I remember correctly, I guess you'd have to ask him. But this was his future. He was not going to be a future in the pro team. That seemed to be the direction. So him with his private job and going to be coaching kids and becoming the goalie coach. So my goalie coach, that took up all his time. And he was learning and getting better as we went along. But I remember one time, you know, Divas has an ego, as I do, as we all do. And I remember one time, Divas was injured. And I remember we had a long conversation in my room. I think it was an hour. And I'm not going to say anything bad at all. It was an NHL goalie, and I'm talking to him. And I think it came down to him, maybe he was almost ready to go, that Peras is going to start, but I'd like you to back up. And he didn't like that because he would want to start because that's his driven. We had a really hefty conversation about this whole thing. You know, I didn't respect this. I respected his career big time, but I also respected Praska, what he had done for us. But anyway, we got it resolved. And I think a couple years later, when I talked to Divas, when I saw him somewhere, I think he saw the meeting a little different. And maybe I saw the meeting a little different. And you kind of shake hands and you learn by all these situations, right? And as a coach, boy, it's tough making calls sometimes. And, you know, players and goalies, they want to play. So we all have egos, but we all try to work together to do the right thing for the team.
I want to take you back to that year and to the end of the regular season, just to give people some perspective on how the league had changed to that point. It was a 7-team league. There was the new Red Bulls out of Salzburg, who finished dead last in the standings. Spoiler alert, that would change over the next couple of years. And then it all came down to the last round of the regular season. And the league had to figure out, or basically the teams had to figure out, whether Villach would earn the fourth place in the standings, or if it would be Graz and them going to the semis. What unfolded in the last round of the regular season in 04-05?
This story is freaking unbelievable. So we're playing at home. I believe it was Linz. Karlsruhe is playing in Graz. We win, thinking back, 5-3-ish. We didn't play great. It was close, but we got it done. Now, we have to wait. I've got NHL players in the dressing room at all the great players that we have in the team. Karlsruhe has to win in Graz for us to make the playoffs. Now, do you think I'm thinking about, oh, if we make the playoffs, I have another contract? That was the last thing on my mind. We are now sitting in the dressing room a good 20 minutes, maybe 30. There's 2,000-3,000 fans still in the rink listening to the game on the radio, Klagenfurt in Graz. Graz is up by a goal, minute to go. We're standing in there. This is freaking amazing. The fans are sitting there. Karlsruhe pulls the goalie. In the last minute, Manny Vaviero scores. It's going to freaking overtime. Karlsruhe still has to win. So now we're still waiting. It's back and forth. Now we're into penalty shots. It came down to the fourth, fifth, whatever number it was. Chaim Olinder is shooting for Klagenfurt. If he scores, we are in the playoffs. It is so quiet in the room. And I know in the rink, you could hear a pin drop. Chaimo goes down. Freak, I get the freaking goosebumps thinking of this. Chaimo freaking scores. They win. Karlsruhe helped us get in the playoffs. Our players went bananas. The fans went crazy. And I remember one of the NHL guys, Moro or Weinreich, said, he said, this is not freaking normal. Talk about an exciting moment.
I just wanted to say, das ist fucking nicht normal. We might be touching on that a tad later. You made the playoffs, and just as you made the playoffs, they were already over in three, as you lost the best of five series against Vienna, the eventual champion, 3-0. What do you remember about those playoffs?
Well, here is my way of thinking. And if I could turn it back, I would have done something differently. And don't get this wrong. This is no disrespect to anybody. Divas was hurt for quite a while, but he was now healthy. But Peraska ran down a bunch of games towards the end. He was playing really good. So now Divas is healthy. Peraska's healthy, but Peraska's had more games, a lot more games. So I have to decide it's best of five. We're playing Vienna. First game's in Vienna. Oh, who do I start with? My gut says Peraska, but I got Divas, NHL goalie, experience. Oh, this is a tough call. I really beat myself up on this call. Okay, I'm going to start Divas. We lose the first game. Divas had an average game. I can say that. I'm sure he would say that too. Okay, so now we're coming home. And here's my way of thinking. Okay. I would say Divas is going to bounce back big time because I've seen him do it in the national team. after losing to Sweden 11-0, coming back, shutting out USA. I had that in my mind. So I knew Divas could come back and be really strong. So I'm going to start Divas. Okay, so we came back, we lost the game, close game. You know, Divas was okay. It's not his fault we lost. But was he on the tip-top of his game where maybe he could have been if he would have not got injured? I can't answer that. Okay, so now it's game three. That's where I should have gone with Peraska. But I was still thinking Divas, with his mentality and his NHL experience, was going to find his way back. I think we lost a close game. And don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming Divas or anybody. It's all of us. If I could turn it back, I at least would have got Peraska in game three. If not, maybe started him and see how it went. Easy to turn it back. Tough, tough decisions to make. No disrespect at all to anybody. But those are the tough calls you have to make. We lost in three. Vienna went on. They were a pretty good team. And that's the way it is.
We talked about the finish to the regular season and the incredible events that unfolded. You hadn't had a chance then, or didn't want to even think about that automatic one-year extension to your contract if you'd reached the playoffs. You eventually got to the playoffs. So I guess during games one, two, and three, you might have shed a thought or two on next year. At what point did it hit you? Hey, okay, I'm going to be here in Fila for another year.
Well, never really crossed my mind. You're trying to, like Peraska and these guys say, you're in it 24-7. I was not thinking about a contract. Maybe in the back of my mind, I knew I was going to come back, but I wasn't thinking about that. So the season ends now, and now I'm going to go in for a contract. So what I did, if I remember, I have to think about this. I believe what I did after my second year, I had my salary and my bonuses. So there's the total that I made. So now coming back with less money in the shortened season, my half year, now in 05-06, I'm negotiating. I said, okay, guys, in my second year here, this is what my total was. Do you think I should make less than that? They said, no, that's fair. I said, okay, so that's how I based my salary. And then I added my bonuses for making the playoffs, semis, bum, winning, whatever. That's how I formulated my contracts.
Did you ever have personal say during the off season? Were you ever consulted when it came to players the club is looking at to bring in?
If I remember, no, not really. You know, Joel Meehan and those guys, they all did a pretty good job. They brought in pretty good players. I did have a little bit to say when Daniel Gauthier, he was playing, I think, in another country and it wasn't working out. He was quite a hockey player. There's some other stories on him, but that's irrelevant. He was a very good hockey player. So I think Joe had asked me, you think we should bring in Gauch? You know, he had a great career in Falkirk too. He's a real good player. Maybe he needs a bit of a jump start, what I could probably help him with. I said, yeah, I think, yeah, he's a good player. Let's bring him in. So we brought in Gauch. But I think when the season ended, they had a pretty good idea of what kind of players we wanted. And I don't think I was involved, or if I was involved at all, it was very little.
I'm asking because there was indeed an infusion of talent. The lockout players obviously all gone because the National Hockey League continued their play. In came a lot of new imports, new fresh faces. How did that summer, how did that fall feel? How was the vibe within the team?
Let me just get back to recruiting players. I remember when I came into my first year, I was behind getting Ryan Foster because he was a really good scorer in Selim Say. I was behind that to bring him in to, you know, be an offensive guy. So, but in general, I was not involved with most of the picks. Well, I just think you come back to work, you go to training camp. I got another crack at this on a one-year contract. So here we go. What are our expectations? You know, we brought. But you know what? I did have a say in Bousquet, who came in that year. I had called, his name came up somewhere. I think probably talking to Joe. I called two or three or four coaches about Danny Bousquet. And a couple of them said, don't touch him. A couple or one was borderline. But I talked to the French coach. I think he was in Germany, Benoit. Can't remember his name. And he said, Greg, I tell you what, I had no problem with Danny. Take him. That conversation with that coach convinced me to take Danny Bousquet. I went with my gut on that, that one conversation on Bousquet. And you know the rest of that story, which is coming up.
We'll definitely get to that, but from one scorer to another, or if one scorer talks about one another, I've heard so many great stories about Danny Bousquet, about his effort in practice and sometimes even during the game, and that it maybe wasn't up to where an import player's efforts should be, but he had just that feel for the game. And I think Markus Pintner once deemed him a Schleicher, someone who's, I wouldn't know a good English translation, but someone who's just kind of elusive and you don't really see and feel during the game, but when it matters, he's in the exact right spot and the puck's in the net. How would you describe Danny Bousquet?
Well, you know what's funny? I come back from Canada and the guys were there and they're scrimmaging out on the ice, and I wasn't on the ice for a couple of practices. Your guys were just scrimmaging. And I was sitting with a couple of the guys and I go, where's Bousquet? Oh, he's out there. He is? That's him? I said, oh my God. He's freaking slow. I don't know. And we were talking. So then we had a couple of practices. I said, he might not make it. He might not make this freaking team. Anyway, we go along. You could see he was elusive. Maybe that's the word you're looking for, right? But he had a knack of scoring. He knew where to be. He wasn't flying all around the ice. He didn't have to. So anyway, we all had question marks in our mind. And of course I do, because I put the stamp on getting this guy. Well, I'm sure Kersey or Pines or the other guys are going to tell you. The season starts, and I think he got two goals his first game, and he had a really long stick. He didn't have to shoot hard. He could just had the feel. And me as a goal scorer, I could appreciate it. And he could pass the puck. And he was even sometimes, if I remember, a dangerous penalty killer with that long stick and his anticipation. So I can't remember if I threw him at the penalty kill right away, but the fans loved him because we get into penalty shots a lot. And here he comes. You know what he's going to do? He just comes down and kind of floats the puck in the net. Puck goes in like a butterfly. Absolutely an interesting player. And if you want to ask me about his conditioning and working out in the gym, ask me about that. Because he had freaking no idea what the gym meant.
I guess I want to leave it at that, because you just had the wonderful opportunity of running into each other due to the 100-year anniversary of Philly a couple of months ago. And I don't want to put some strain on your relationship. I'm wondering about the start to the year. And it was a really good one. And just to let listeners in on what happened that year too, it was still a 7-team league, but a wholly different one, because Red Bull Salzburg finally put the Red Bull money to really good use, became a powerhouse to be reckoned with. That was basically the year Red Bull, the start to Red Bull always competing. And they've been competitive ever since. They've never been out of the playoffs. They've always been in contention. They always had great players. And eventually, they'd lead the standings up until the end of the regular season. But you, two teams, Salzburg and Villach, you got off to great starts. At what point, and I'm always asking championship-winning coaches and championship-winning players the same question, because I just want to get a feel for it when it starts to mix and mesh. At what point did you have the feeling that something special is happening in the locker room right now, or could be eventually happening at year's end?
I didn't have that feeling. You go day-to-day business. We know we have a good team. You don't think too far ahead. We probably talked about our goals. Hey, guys, we're going to make the freaking playoffs. You know what the big goal is. And you roll with it. I didn't think, oh, this is a special team. We had good players like Herbie Holmberger and Stewie and Gauthier. Oh, a lot of really good guys. Lancey, Kropi, Kaspitz, Pintner, Peroski, and Nets. Like, Malkreid backup. I don't want to forget anybody here. Hey, we just go about our business. We knew we were a pretty good team. We were tough, kind of rugged at home. We were just rolling along. Salzburg was the big favorite. They were freaking really good team and great speed. So we plugged our way along, and I remember never really thinking too much about it. Because, you know, Martin, when you make the playoffs, anything can happen. So we didn't look too far ahead. Let's get to the playoffs. Let's go from there.
You know who thought a lot about you? One of the people who regularly delivers great stories about you, and one of the new players on that Villach team, who, of course, has become a great friend of yours, is Markus Pintner. He brought along a story. I hope it's from this year. It could also be from the year after, but let's just pretend it might have happened over the course of New Year's Day, New Year's Eve of 05 and 06. That's the little spoiler alert that I'll put on this. We'll listen in together what went down, obviously, over the change of the year of one of those years Markus played for Philip, because it's very telling about you as a coach. This is what he had to tell. I'll translate for all the international listeners at the very end of it.
Eine weitere Geschichte vom Holste, und zwar zu der Zeit noch, als ich unter ihm Spieler war. Wir haben am 31. Dezember ein Training gehabt. Wir haben gewusst, dass wir am 2. Jänner wieder das nächste Spiel haben. Der Holste hat gesagt, das ist kein Problem, wenn ihr daheim seid und vielleicht mal ein Bier trinkt, aber alle bereiten sich höchst professionell vor, keiner geht vor, der will keinen in der Stadt sehen. Und das hat er sehr überzeugend vorgetragen in der Mannschaft. Ja, ich war dort noch in der Sturm- und Drangphase, würde ich sagen. Und zu später Stunde in der Stadt natürlich bin ich in eine Bar gegangen und leicht gestolpert, mein Getränk verschüttet. Und ja, haben wir noch nicht allzu viel dabei gedacht. Als der Herr vor mir noch sich umgedreht hat, bin ich draufgekommen, dass das der Holste war. Das war natürlich auch ganz eine interessante Geschichte, weil zwei Tage später haben wir gespielt und er hat sein Motivationsgespräch, Vortrag gehalten vor der Partie und hat uns gesagt, dass wir in diese Nizze war es noch damals, dass wir richtig Gas geben müssen, weil diese Nizze ist gut und schnell und physisch stark und so weiter und so fort. Also eine ganz wichtige Partie und war er eh schon sehr energiegeladen und schon ein bisschen grumpy, würde ich sagen. Und dann ist er rausgegangen und ich habe mir gedacht, okay, jetzt habe ich Glück gehabt, der hat nichts zu mir gesagt. Und dann habe ich richtig gemerkt, dass er der Holste im Anzug mit seinen Cowboy-Stiefeln umgedreht hat, zurückgekommen ist und gesagt hat, und fucking Pintner, dir ist eh klar, du laufst ein bisschen mehr wie alle anderen. Das ist, glaube ich, das Wichtigste für dich. Lauf mehr wie alle anderen. Und ist wieder gegangen. Dort habe ich natürlich gewusst, dass ich wirklich sehr viel Druck habe in der Partie. Und zum Glück wirklich mit sehr viel Glück ist es gut ausgegangen. Ich habe in dem Spiel sogar noch gepunktet und wir haben gewonnen und der Holste war noch happy und hat mich sein lassen.
Okay, because of the fact that he mentioned Jesenice, it had to have happened the year thereafter because Jesenice joined the league in 07 and 08. But do you remember that situation?
No, but it happened probably a few times, not with him. And I'm going to tell you what's happened to me in my career. So I know how to handle it. Like, I'm a player's coach, right? And if you think Pines was the only guy out, we had a pretty freaking wild team, but they showed up. But he's the guy that I ran into. So it's called playing guilty. And I've been through it as a player too. You're out at the wrong time, at the wrong place, and the coach knows. All he's got to do is look at you, and you just better show up. He's the guy that got caught, I guarantee. And he's not going to rat at anybody because most of the guys were probably out in other places. I don't remember that exactly, but it happens. And it's part of life and part of the game. And you just challenge a player. It's called playing guilty. And boy, sometimes you can play great games when you play guilty. And he went out and had a great game. So, hey, you leave it, you move on to the next story. Because the next stories are coming from somebody.
My bad, I didn't translate for the international listeners. Basically, Marcus Pintner got a speech from you on New Year's Eve. Don't go out, don't be seen, don't drink. And of course, he went out and he stumbled into you in a bar. And next day or next game, you took him to the side.
At 2 in the morning.
At 2 in the morning,
What was I doing out?
that's maybe for another discussion. But when he went out for the next game, you took him to the side and you told him, you are going to skate extra hard tonight. You're going to have to bring that extra effort for what happened. And you, of course, scored and the rest is history. But you being a player's coach and you being able to understand all the things also from a player's side, because you played so long and you were so successful, how long did it really take you to find that fine line with players, when to be coming down hard on them and when trying to be the coach who tries to understand? Because every player is different. And we had Mike Stewart, who is now the very successful head coach of the Grizzlies Wolfsburg, on his program before. And he said, when talking to a player that wasn't performing, he tried to get through to him and he found out that his dog had died. And that's what made him so sad and what eventually translated to Diona's performance. So there could be so many things that go on with players and whatnot. But how did you try to find that fine line when to be the understanding kind of coach, and then the coach who comes down hard on players?
Well, I think I kind of had that from day one. It was just a feeling, right? Because remember one thing, just Mike Stewart, when he coached the Felak, he was a player right before. That's completely different than my situation, right? Because I only played 1 year in Felak, and so I knew these guys from nationally, but I was okay with it my first year. The hardest part is which players can handle an aggressive conversation, which players do you handle delicately, which players can you push, look them right in the freaking eye, like Mike Stewart, he could handle it, certain guys could handle it. You try to find the right buttons to push for each guy. I could not have had intense conversations with Bousquet like I did with Mike Stewart, for example. That is the feeling of what I could push buttons with Herbie Holmberger. He was tough as nails. He was a great player, right? And Herbie could take it, right? Not that there was that much of it, but he was fine. So which players can you push hard? Which players do you handle with care? That's the delicate part of coaching, and a very important part of coaching.
maybe the most essential one if you really look at everything that goes into it. But the funny thing about your 5 or 6 season, apart from what happened at the tail end of it, is how the regular season finished and folded. The year prior, Klagenfurt helped you guys get into the playoffs and get you another year and a contract extension in Villach. And in 05-06, Vienna and Klagenfurt were locked into a battle for the last playoff spot. And everything had to go right, obviously, for the two teams. Every point was incredibly important. And then 2 days before the end, or 2 rounds before the end of the regular season happens, you and Vienna face off in Vienna. Without getting to what happened at the end, but what do you remember about that day, about getting to the rink and the game that unfolded up until the penalty shootout?
No, like every other game. I think I played Mokrek, gave Praska a rest because he was playing a lot and we had playoffs coming up. And we went into the game and, you know, I think 10 minutes to go, we're up in the game. So we're winning the game. So we're trying to win the game. We're not saying let's play for Klagenfurt or against them. No, we want to win the game. And then, of course, a couple late penalties, they score a goal. They ended up tying it up. Some questionable calls, if I remember correctly. We were trying to win that game. And of course, it goes to overtime, eventually to penalty shots. And you know that story.
We'll get to that story in a bit. I want to bring up Markus Kerschbaumer because, of course, he has got a lot to say about the events that day and that week too. And he's providing the backstory to one of the legendary TV moments once had here in terms of hockey broadcasts. But let's just listen in to Markus Kerschbaumer. Again, I'll translate for all the non-German-speaking listeners at the tail end of this, and then we'll talk about it.
In unserem Meisterjahr, in der Saison 2005-2006, hat es ja das skandalöse Penaltyschießen in Wien gegeben. Da gibt es eine kleine Vorgeschichte. Eine Runde zuvor haben wir gegen Innsbruck zu Hause gespielt und wir haben beschlossen, unseren Backup, den Patrick Marreich, zu spielen lassen, um den Gerd vor den Playoffs noch eine Pause zu gönnen. Wir haben das Spiel dann, ich glaube, 2-4 verloren. Tag drauf hat es in den Zeitungen Statements gegeben von Klagenfurt, dass wir das Spiel absichtlich verloren haben, nur dass der KC nicht in die Playoffs kommt. Der Greg hat das gelesen und war fuchsteufelswild. Er hat sich eigentlich den ganzen Tag nicht beruhigen können, weil wenn man den Greg kennt, der will jedes Spiel gewinnen und das macht wenig keinen Unterschied, ob jetzt der Starting-Goalie spielt oder der Backup. Er hat das einfach nicht verstanden, wie man sowas von sich geben konnte. Im Spiel selbst dann war es dann auch sehr turbulent. Wir waren 4-2 vorne und plötzlich haben wir eine Strafe nach der anderen bekommen. Daraufhin hat Wien das Spiel ausgeglichen und es ging ins Penaltyschießen. Dann hat es diesen Skandal gegeben mit den extra Schützen. Ich war neben Greg, ich habe gesehen, welche Nummer ich eingetragen hat und für mich war das die 54 und nicht die 24. Ja, und daraufhin ist es dann nach dem Spiel eskaliert.
So, to get the backstory straight, and obviously for Markus Kerschbaumer, who's a little younger and probably remembers a little bit more about everything that unfolded there. You played Patrick Mokrek one game before going to Vienna instead of Gerd Prohaska. You wanted to give him a breather. And apparently a couple of days later in the newspaper, Klagenfurt was complaining that you intentionally lost the game or played your backup to lose so that Klagenfurt wouldn't be getting closer to place number 4 in the standings. And that Markus remembers you being pissed the entire day because Klagenfurt assuming that you wouldn't want to play to win. How do you look back on, or after having heard this, how do you look back on the situation now?
I kind of forgot about that, like you said. But yeah, that was in my mind, obviously. And Marcus also said in the conversation, I wanted to win every freaking game. There was absolutely no truth to us losing on purpose. Zero. That did go into the next game. You know, it's maybe deep down inside me, but I'm trying to win the game. And we were up 4-2. And I think that's the game that Vienna had. If Vienna lost, as I think ex-champions, they wouldn't have been in the playoffs. And somebody else would have got bumped out. That's why this had even way more repercussions to not just the game. Other teams were watching, if I remember correctly.
Now the game in Vienna. Vitally important for Vienna, important for Klagenfurt. You and Salzburg being the cream of the crop in the league, not too important for Villach as it goes towards the standings or as regards the standings. The game in Vienna goes to a shootout. And what's the procedure for coaches before a shootout?
Well, they come over. It's five guys, right? So you come over. There's no official doc. You have a piece of it. You write down your five guys. So I write five. They come over and say, but we need a sixth player. Why do you need a sixth player? Never heard of this. In case somebody gets hurt. Well, first of all, we didn't follow that. So I put down the first five, and then I draw a line, and a sixth, it's 24 Lansinger. Okay, whatever. So we go through the first five. So it comes down to blah, blah, back and forth. Setsing is their top player, one of the best players in the league, great goal scorer. Busquets is the top scorer in the league, great goal scorer. So we get through, Busquets does score, Setsinger scores. Okay, so now it's sudden death. You could pick anybody you want. We come over, we write down the numbers again. Kershaw's right beside me. I write 54. Now, do we know Setsinger's going to shoot? Of course we do. Does anybody in the world, nothing against Lancey, my buddy, I'm going to put Lancey ahead of Busquets? If I don't let Busquets shoot, you may as well fire me on the spot. So Busquets goes out, Lancey scores, Setsi scored, Busquets goes down, scores. All of a sudden, I think Jim Boney hands up, called the ref over. There's a verbal, what's going on? The wrong guy shot. You said 24. I said, what are you guys, sick in the freaking coconut or what? Probably some other words. The ref came over. I showed him the list. He took the list, which I never saw again. And they huddled up and the game was over. So now I walk off the ice. Mike Stewart, we're chasing the referee. I think it was a Czech referee. We're chasing him. No, go away. Boom, it's over. So anyway, the team's going off, fuming. I go off the ice. Herbie Holmberg is up ahead of me. I go off the ice and I am freaking fuming for my players. A fan kind of jumped over and was kind of coming at me. So I go, well, I'm going to have to protect myself. So I booted him. I kicked him kind of up there in the chest, just knocked him back with a kick, right? Cops were standing over there. Another guy had the flag. I think Herbie swung a stick, broke the guy's flag. There was a lot of stuff going on. Emotions were high. I walk now. We get that little episode out of the way. I walk around the corner, 5 meters, and I see a microphone standing out. And he said, Greg, are you ready for an interview? And I said, you're fucking right, I am. There it was. Nothing planned. No speeches written. Emotion pure. And then the interview happened.
You know what? Let's just listen into a small part how that interview can be seen on YouTube. I'm sure everybody listening to this program has seen it many, many times. But just to refreshen people's minds, this is how it sounded.
Nur ein Punkt letzten Endes für die Villacher Adler heute Abend, Greg Horst. Wen haben Sie denn nominiert zu diesem sechsten Penalty?
Busquets. Where's the top scorer in the fucking league? Where's the top scorer in the league? Busquets. He had Lancey. Lancey was a sixth fucking man. Only vote with the list and the second. Das ist kein Sieg. Erstens, 4-2 vorne, 5 gegen 3 gespielt für 5 Minuten. Es ist eine Schande für österreichische Eishockey.
Sie haben den Zettel dem Schiedsrichter gezeigt. Was hat der Schiedsrichter gesagt?
Nichts. Keine Ahnung. Er hat es geschaut. 54, der 6. war 24. Heute ist das erste Mal ein 6. Blocken. Es ist eine Schande für fucking österreichische Eishockey. Eine Schande.
Also aus Ihrer Sicht ein Skandal, eine Skandalentscheidung.
Es ist ein fucking komplett Skandal. Er ist ein fucking 5 gegen 3 für 5 Minuten. Und das ist fucking nicht normal.
Wird man da Protest einlegen von vielerer Seite?
Fucking absolut. Und erstens, das ist fucking Klangfurt. Ich bin froh, dass KC heute verloren haben, weil sie haben nur fucking gejammert, über das wir absichtlich verloren haben. Okay? Du siehst das Niveau, was die Klangfurter haben. Danke.
Okay, danke, Greg Horst.
Was this the maddest you've ever been after a game as a coach?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and for lots of reasons, right? And right at the end of that, you could hear a bang. That was me kicking the referee's door. I just threw that in there at the end, right? But in the background, you could hear Mike Stewart. He was freaking fuming too. Yeah, I'd say my heart was going about 200, maybe 210. But you do it to protect your players because at that moment, we won the game or it was still tied. So it happened. I did get a game suspension and a 500 euro fine. If that happened now, I'd probably get a little bit more than that. But you know what's funny? This went around pretty quick, right? I mean, this is not planned. I got a call from Todd Ehrlich. The great Todd Ehrlich freaking phoned me. He probably had a couple of beers or something. I don't know. He phoned me and said, Holstein, it's Todd. I said, yeah, Todd, what do you want? He said, unbelievable interview. If you get a fine, I'm going to pay it for you. I said, thanks, Todd. See you later. That is so true. He didn't pay the fine, but he was thinking about me. And we played them in the semis, as you know. But the team actually picked up the fine, 500. I did get a game suspension. And you know what's funny, Martin? I played 19 years pro or whatever I did, coached for a long time. And you're remembered for one interview. How crazy is that?
You see, this is why we're doing the series, that you'll be remembered for a lot more than just this interview. But I want to talk about the aftermath of the interview in just a bit. This is 70 in 7 Part 6, the series about the great hockey life of Greg Holst. This is a quick break. We'll be back after this.
Win today, hockey, no fun. Do you enjoy listening to Win Today, Hockey O'Clock? If that is the case, then please rate the podcast. A 5-star rating or a review over at the podcast dealer of your choice would go a long way in helping to spread the good word of hockey. Win Today, Hockey O'Clock, the hockey podcast with real and open-ended hockey conversations.
Win Today, Hockey O'Clock.
Back on 70 in 7, back with part 6, the penultimate episode of the great hockey series, of the great hockey life of Greg Holst. It's the years from 50 to 60. We're talking about 2004 to 2014. And we're just coming off of an emotional roller coaster, right? An emotional outburst during a TV interview and everything that unfolded thereafter. You talked about the suspension, but you also talked about players, like the interview going around fast, the great Todd Ehrlich calling you. I understand There were t-shirts created too after the interviews, and your mom still has one. Is that correct?
Yes, it does. It says fucking absolute. Sorry, in a sweater, but that's what it says.
How did that come all about?
The kids had it on their phone tone. Oh, boy.
Tell me, how did that come about? Who came up with the idea, you know what, put this on a t-shirt?
I have absolutely no idea. It was completely out of my hands. We're getting ready to go into playoffs. It was the first, it was history for me. But do you know how it all ended? Do you know how this all ended?
That's what I wanted to get to, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so what happened was the league gets involved. So, okay, we're going to replay the penalty shot. So five or six guys, Kershi knows the story exactly. Five or six guys and the goalie. Panker was in nets for Vienna. He showed me a picture. Wait till you hear this story. And Mark Wright, I think it was Mark Wright or Peraska. I think it was Mark Wright. Anyway, they have to drive back on a Tuesday to Vienna. No me. I'm not allowed to go. It'll be freaking a mess. And they have to get dressed. They're going to go on, and Lansing is going to take one shot. Not even Bousquet. And we're going, well, what are you going to do? So they're on the way there, 2-3 hours into the trip. I get a phone call. We have to come back. They turned around and came back because Vienna had gone to court legally to stop this. I guess that's how it works, something like that, legally. So, what a mess this is. So we're at a stalemate because it's now in the legal system that this shouldn't have to happen. They won the game. Okay, if I remember right, the league gets involved and they say, here's what we're going to do. The whole team from FELAC drives down because we're playing in Graz on Friday, I think it was. Time suspended from that, but I'm going with the team. The whole team drives down. The league is going to pay for our hotel. There was like freaking 2,000 fans. So we get there. Both teams have to dress, skate around a bit, warm up. Lance is going to shoot, which is not correct, but I said, guys, we got to roll with this. And they were on me. Fans, some of their players yapping at me. Like, really? If we would have won that game, there wouldn't have been enough police, seriously, in that arena to protect me. I would have been in trouble. I'm deadly serious. So anyway, they score. The Lions is going down. Well, you know who shot. I'm setting it, right? No, sorry. No, it was only Lansing to shoot. Setsi had already scored. This is for one shooter. Lansing goes down, fires, boom, misses the net. Did it hit Panker? Not sure. It's over. They win. They're all excited. I'm going, thank God. Panker, last year when we did a game, he called me in. He said, Greg, you remember that penalty shot? He showed me a picture. He was the goalie. He had lost his glove, his catching glove. And when Lance shot, he had no freaking glove. And somehow, this is unbelievable. It didn't go in. Anyway, Vienna wins. They're in the playoffs. We go to Linz. I sat out my game. Now the playoffs start. Now the fun begins. This is an incredible story, this story.
Also because of the fact that Vienna made the playoffs, Klagenfurt didn't. Did you, after everything that had gone on the weeks prior, feel some kind of satisfaction for Klagenfurt not to make it?
Absolutely, 100% not. Never crossed my freaking mind. It never crossed my mind. Remember one thing. If Cartier doesn't win that game 2 years prior, I'm not even having a coaching job. Not that I thought about that either. No, of course not. You play to win the game. And Martin, we've talked. My favorite place to play as a player was always in Klagenfurt. When they came to Innsbruck, we had a full house every time. Okay, we headbutted stuff in the coaching. Hey, I had a lot of respect for the organization, 24 cups or more or whatever. A lot of great players. No, we had this was a hot rivalry. But no, you don't wish somebody bad. Absolutely not.
You get into the playoffs and you play a great back and forth series against an Innsbruck team with some great players, with Todd Ehrlich, who played out of his mind in that series and in the seven game series that it eventually became. How do you look back on that series?
Wow, what a series. You know what happened in that series? And it was close. And they did have a good team. And Ehrlich was the leader. Felak ended up moving from the new rink over into the big old Olympia Stadium. Because now they're going to get 5,000-6,000, which they did. So I remember, boy, it was heated though. Hayworth was their coach, and it was heated. We won, they won. It's now, and we're playing in Innsbruck, and my son is on the bench. He's maybe not playing much, but he's dressed. And in game 4 or 6, we were getting some bad calls against us. And of course, I got to keep my team fired up. So I have a few words for Hayworth on the bench, right? Back and forth. Yeah, screw you, whatever. The period ends at the end of the second. And we're both walking off our benches. And we are now face to face. And I'm pointing. And he's pointing. We almost came to blows. Now the players are all piling up right in between the benches. And I remember Mike, big tall, he's a big tall guy. He kind of was already ahead. He started coming back in, trying to look up over the crowd. And he told me after, he said, "Dad, I knew, I couldn't see you, but I knew you were right in the middle of that massacre." Anyway, that was tension. It was big time. It was a great series. So now we go home to game 7. This is going to be close because they're good. We're no guarantee to win. And I remember before the game, we're not going to have the same meeting because there's nothing else to talk about. We know their power play. We know their PK. We know everything that's going on. We know their key guys. I said, "So what do I do? What do we do for a meeting?" So I said, all the guys in the room, they all sat on the floor. I said, "Dim the lights." I played that football, "The inches are all around us." The famous football speech. I just played that. You know, it gives you goosebumps.
It's Al Pacino from Any Given Sunday, isn't it?
Yes. And the guys, you could feel the energy in the room. Didn't have to say a word. Guys were fired up. It was, we outshot them 50-20-ish, maybe 50-23. But it was closer than that because at 4-2, I remember in the second, Ehrlich almost scored to make it 4-3. Then it would have been tight. We won the game. The place went freaking bananas. Now we're going clear underdogs going to the finals against Red Bull.
The mighty Red Bulls that had home ice advantage. You coming off of that 7-game series, Salzburg winning a series or their series in 5, you being on a roll, having quote-unquote momentum, Salzburg a couple of days of rest. What do you remember about the finals?
Well, I remember about the finals, like, Gauthier had got hurt. I think he broke his hand or something. And we had brought a guy in a little earlier named Roy. I'm trying to remember all this correctly. And he was a funny skater, but he
Stéphane
was an effective. Yeah, and he was an effective player. Odd-looking skater, but he could get it done. So, of course, Gauthier is a big, talented guy, but he was, broke his hand. I remember the playoff start. I think we were a little bit older than Salzburg, and they're young and fast. They're rested, we're beat up, 7-game series. Consensus was papers, boom, through the league, because the league's watching this close. I know my buddies and people in Tirol. We've got no chance because they're rested and we're beat up. Okay, so we go in. walk into the first game, play really good. We win. Then we come home. Boy, it's fired up. We win game two. Now the papers and the consensus has all changed. Felix's going to win. Salzburg's not going to win this. So game three, they win. We come home. If we win, we're up 3-1. We lose the game. It's 2-2. So what do you think happened with the perception of all the people, the papers, everybody around? What was the buzz now? Now it's back. Now it's finally caught up to us. We've run out of juice. Salzburg won the last two. They're arrested. We're in trouble. We walk into Salzburg and we win 6-2. What a game. I remember Lancey scoring a fourth or fifth goal, like an unbelievable goal. Guys were freaking warriors. We're killing penalties now down the stretch, 5-on-3, 5-on-3, whatever. Herbie Holmer blocks a shot, breaks his freaking ankle. Anyway, we survive it. We lose Herbie, which was a mega loss. Now we're going back. It's 3-2 for us. Do you think there was a buzz in the city of Felek? Oh, my God. Game six, to win the championship at home as underdogs against Red Bull.
How often did you try to pull that often used by coaches motivational plug, us against the world, nobody believes in you, we're the only ones that believe in ourselves kind of thing?
You don't broadcast it. But you make it known. And sometimes when there's an article in the paper that has us down and out, we would put it on the board, underline it. Guys, just take a look at that. Circle that sentence, will you? You look for little things to motivate certain guys. You use the underdog because we were underdog. And we've gone 7 games. Now we've gone 13 games. They've gone 2 or 3 less. They're heavily favored, which they were. But we're at home, guys. This is our house. We know it's going to be close. But do you remember, Martin, how many times we talked about scoring 3 goals and giving up less than 3, like over the last 4 or 5 years since we've met? How many times we talk about this? Because we were a rugged, tough team with the freaking best goalie in the league in Peraska. So here we are in game 6. They score. I think Ulrich scored pretty early.
Yeah, 59 seconds into the game.
They score. Okay, so, you know, here they come. But I remember, was it I think it was in the first period. It wasn't the second. Great pass out of the corner. Kropi's high in the slot. He got the puck. He one-timed it. He beat NHL goalie Arthur Urbe. What a shot. Krumpy scores, it's 1-1. The place is freaking going nuts. Not a couple shifts later, not long after, Pintner, one of the most underrated Austrian players in the game, offensively and defensively, just his persona, he was one of the most underrated players. He came down, made the cut inside, the Plekanec push to the outside to his forehand, shot back across, far side, top shelf. Perfect move. Perfect shot. I can visualize it. We're up 2-1. Now the place it's pandemonium.
13 seconds after scoring the equalizer, Fila is up 2-1.
It was that close. Wow. Wow. Wow.
Game goes back and forth. Salzburg scores the equalizer via Frank Benham in the second period. And of course, the game goes to overtime. What I'm especially interested in, how do you look back on that overtime intermission, especially knowing that as a player, you came close to a championship. But that championship, that coveted one, and every player, doesn't matter in which league and at what time, every player, every coach is looking forward to of course, winning a championship, because that's why we're playing the games. How do you look back on that overtime intermission? What do you remember about it?
Well, Martin, it wasn't one time I was close. It's probably five or six times in the finals, including the American Hockey League. So is it on your mind? At this moment, of course not. You're going into overtime at home against a really good hockey club, but it's 2-2. I can't remember what I said, but guys, let's go out there, have courage, and let's try to win the freaking game. But, you know, you don't open up. I don't know what we talked about, but you don't open up. You still play a structured game. We've got a really good goalie, as they do at Arthur Irbe. I can't remember what I said. Boys, shift for shift. Let's go out there, give it all we got. May the best team win.
So not nervous at all? Anything like that?
No, you can't. You're in the moment. You can't go, oh guys, got to be careful. No, thank you. It's exciting. You coach and play for moments like this, and they happen almost never. And remember, a couple years before, we're in the same situation. Up 2-1 game at five. That's how close it is. We went to overtime in that game. So this is exciting for coaches, for players, for fans. And not 2 years later, we're right back at it. I mean, what an exciting run. So we go out there. The fans are singing and screaming as they always do. And there's tension in that rink. And talk about exciting.
17 minutes and 31 seconds played in overtime. Bousquet scores the championship winning goal. Place goes bananas. And your first reaction wasn't heading towards the scrum of players. You ran towards Gerd Prohaska. What made you decide to do that instead of go to all the other players?
Well, can you let me talk about the goal first? Because I could give you play by play.
Do it.
So before I put my running shoes on and ran to Prohaska, I'm going to tell you how this happened. Because I could see it right now. And how many years ago is it? 17? You believe that? Tried to come flying around the net. This guy's a hell of a player. He was flying up. And the puck got turned over in the neutral zone. So now the puck's in the neutral zone. It pops up to Mickey Ellick's stick. Ellick was a great, great, great player. Mickey Ellick flies down the right side as a left-handed shot. Stefan Waugh is kind of driving towards the net because we have to get to Irbe. He gets inside the circle, a little lower, and takes a backhand into the crease. Stefan Waugh is in there banging around and the puck and snuck out to the right side. And who is cruising in from the left with that long stick? Mr. Danny Bousquet. And he slipped it in there. And oh my God, we just won the freaking championship. Are you kidding me? I'm on the bench. Hugged Herbie there with a cast on. Gauthier was there. What a freaking moment for the fans, the city, the players. Wow. Something I will never forget. Okay, so now to your question. What made me go that way? Because I remember back what Prohaska had done for it and the headbutting we had and how great he played. Without him, we don't win. And of course, they're mobbing Bousquet in the group. So I go down to Prohaska. Kershey was with him. And Kershey was down low talking to him. I said, Kershey, just give me a sec with Pro, will you? Kershey stepped off. I went down. And he said something to me, because I gave him a hug. I said, freaking unbelievable, Pro. He said to me, hey, coach, thanks for believing in me. I had a freaking tear in my eye. I'll never forget that. What a moment for me. What a moment for the city. What a moment for the players. Wow. Talk about sports being exciting.
How did it feel to finally raise a championship trophy?
Didn't really hit me till the next day, because that night we partied, we went out, we had a great time, the city was on fire. I had a girlfriend at the time. She was from Innsbruck. She came down. We went out, had a great time. The next day, I was going for a walk by myself. All of a sudden, I felt this emotion, like I started having tears in my eyes because it was like an elephant off my back. The questions. You know what's brutal? No, it was like an elephant off my back. Because you make the finals 5-6 times, you make the finals 3 times in hockey or 4 times, you're second. You finish second and people think you're a loser. That's how brutal sports can be. You're 30 teams sitting at home and they think you're a loser. I didn't and don't consider myself a loser, but that's the perception of sports, right? So for me to win this, it was such a satisfactory feeling and really emotional. By myself, walking around at my age, tears in my eyes. But that's the emotion of the game. Everything the coaches, we all put into it. It's over. The beer tastes fantastic, and quite a lot of them. A great, great memory.
I was lucky enough to conduct so many series with players on that team, Hockey O'Clock original series, that might be, with Gerd Prochazka, with Markus Pintner, and they told stories from almost every angle about the championship in 05-06. It's incredible that it's been 18 years to this day that Villach had to wait for another championship. Hopefully the great hockey town of Villach eventually gets to another final and gets another championship. But you being the coach and by default one of the faces of the team, with that interview, with you being that highly successful player, did you ever think that you were popular?
Did I think I was popular? I never really thought about that. Don't forget, they love you, they hate you, right? Sometimes your own fans too, they love you, they hate you. On the road, they love you, they hate you. So I never thought about my popularity at all. But I remember going out with Joe Meehan after. And we went out after the fact, a few days later. We went up into Italy, up in Lushari, I think it was. It's a little city up in the mountain. And we went up there and we had a couple of beers. There was lots of people there that knew who we were and were waving and shaking their heads. And you become just that win and being successful in the finals 3 times now of 4 years, playing young guys, not afraid to play young guys. I would say, my popularity might have been growing a little bit, a lot more than the first year. So I never really thought about that, though. I just thought about what a great moment and what satisfaction it finally was.
The reason why I'm asking is because the year after, in 06-07, Lawrence Satcharuk, and we heard from him in earlier parts of 17-07, joined the coaching ranks for a year and a half in Austria. So he spent time in Innsbruck. He spent some time with the Graz 99ers. And it might have happened a little bit later, but I thought it might be fitting right here, hearing him talk about how he discovered your incredible popularity. Pardon me. We'll listen in to what he had to say, and then we'll talk about it.
Greg was so popular, one time after a game when I was coaching in Innsbruck, my wife and I, Shelley, went to a cafe to have a beer and sort of celebrate the win. The waiter came over and gave a book for Shelley to sign because she recognized that she was Greg Holst's sister. It was a book by Ernest Hemingway. I asked the waiter, hey, buddy, maybe I could sign that too. He said, no, just Greg Holst's sister, please.
Holy cow. That is popularity, if you ask me.
Well, I tell you why, because she's a hell of a lot better looking than I was. I tell you that. Yeah, whatever. It's kind of a neat story. Thank you for sharing it. I didn't know that story. It's the first time I ever heard that story.
There you go. Bringing people together and coming up with stories that you, in your story, career, haven't heard yet. The transition from the 05-06 championship winning year to the 06-07, and I'll put them together, 07-08 years. How was it finally being a championship winning head coach, finally having that coveted bullseye on your back?
Well, I still had no contract, right? So I have to sign another 1 year. And I did the same thing. My salary and my bonus. Do you think I should make less as my salary? And they said no. So that's how I based my salary. That's how I worked my way up. If we're successful, my salary got better. So I worked my way up to a good contract. Okay, we'll run through it pretty quick. We got a pretty good team, you know. Salzburg, of course, the big team. And we're rolling along pretty freaking good. And we make the finals again. So I don't know who we played. I can't remember. But we swept or won in 5 in the semis. So we had like 5 or 6 days off. I'll make this pretty quick. Salzburg also, I'm sure, was rested. But we had a lot of time off. So I told the guys this. I said, look, we sat all the guys down in the room. We had a meeting the next day or whatever it was. And I went to every guy. I asked them, how old are you, Crumpy? How old are you, Lancey? How old are you, Gauthier? How old are you, Scobie? I went to Caspi. I went to every player. I said, how old are you? They all told me their age. I said, look, we have 5 or 6 days off. Take care of yourself, because you never know when the next time we're going to be in the finals, because it's hard to get here. When was the last time we were in the finals? That year. So I said, go out tonight, a party, have a good time, boom. And the last 4 days, take care of yourself, because we got to crack at this. I felt we could win. I really did. Anyway, game 1 starts. We practice during the week. I wasn't observant to a couple of things I should have been, and I usually am. I have a good feel for guys, whatever. We're down 1-0 late in the game. We have a 5-on-3. I said, guys, you need a timeout? Coach, yell the guys. No, we're good, coach. We're good. 5-on-3. Something's not right. It's just not clicking. It's the passing. Something's off. Empty net goal, Payval scores, we lose 2-0. I get home, the phone's ringing off Joe Mion's hook. I said, Joe, what's going on? He said, a couple of the guys were out every night till 5 in the morning. No names, I'm just saying, and whatever. And I said, okay, well, let's try to win game 2 and let's address it and move on. I should have been more observant. Because I'm the coach. I have to know what's going on. I can't babysit guys. But I have to. It's my job to get the feel of the vibe in the room or practice or whatever. Okay. So it didn't happen. So anyway, we're out in game 2 going on. And Gauthier cross-checked the guy. And then he ended up getting another cross-check. He ended up getting suspended. And then he was out. So we're rolling along. And we couldn't get our mojo back. I think we lost in 6, maybe. We were all disappointed. If I could turn it back, I, as a coach, would have been paying more attention to some off-ice stuff and some things, because it's my job. But we were very disappointed. I honestly felt that we could win that year. But we didn't. But anyway, so here we are, the meeting that I did have with the guys, it could be your last time in the finals, so take care of it. They have never been back since. That's how hard it is to make the freaking finals.
Just to get a couple of things out of our way, Salzburg won the series in 5, and the series is remembered for, well, its physicality and a lot of, maybe people would label it dirty stuff that was going on. Did you deliberately wanted to have your team kind of on the edge? Because Salzburg that year had, of course, reloaded like no other team in the league could. They desperately wanted to win that championship. So it was kind of, not that it was a David against Goliath story, but it's not too far away from that. Did you tell the guys, listen, the only way we can stop this Salzburg team is if we're making them think about us constantly in terms of physicality?
100% not. I thought we could win. Hey, we were a tough team. But the one incident that happened, the two incidents that happened with one player, was nothing to do with me. He was on his own. He got suspended, and that was not good. That was not appreciated by anybody, and we lost a good player. And no, 100% not. We played our normal. You know, you're going to go to the net. Stewie, Herbie, guys are tough. No, 100% not. We thought we could win on our skill, our speed, our grittiness, our toughness. Never would I intentionally have somebody go out to hurt another player, ever. That was completely what happened, was completely out of my hands, and it was not good. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's move on to the next story. Because I was sick to my stomach for a month, I swear to God. After that season, I looked at some of the guys that gave it everything. I felt sick to my stomach for a month.
I'll get to that feeling in a bit, but as you said, let's move on to the next story. Brings me to Markus Kerschbaumer, because he brought along another story from all those run-ins that you and Salzburg had. We're talking about finals in 05-06. We're talking about the finals in 06-07. We're talking about the quarters in 07 and 08. So a lot of opportunities to bang heads, a lot of known faces, a lot of battles that have been going on. This is a story from one of those altercations in the playoffs that Markus Kerschbaumer brought along. Let's listen in together and then let's talk about it.
In der Saison 2006-2007 waren wir wieder im Finale gegen Salzburg. Und wir waren da nicht mehr so hungrig, um die Meisterschaft zu gewinnen. Und wir haben zeitweise mit sehr, sehr unfairen Mitteln versucht, die Salzburger zu stoppen, beziehungsweise ein bisschen einzuschüchtern. Und damals war es auch so, dass wenn ein Spieler wirklich am Eis gelegen ist, war er eigentlich kein richtiger Eishockeyspieler, sondern eher ein Weichling. Und die hochtalentierten Spieler der Salzburger haben von unseren Spielern schon einiges abbekommen. Und das hat den Krieg nicht wirklich so gepasst. Und in der Drittelpause kam dann der Krieg zu mir und sagt, bring mir bitte ein Deo. Und ich frage den Krieg, für was brauchst du ein Deo? Und der Krieg war damals schon so aufgewühlt und krantig und sagt, bring mir das fucking Deo. Und dann habe ich in das Deo gebracht. Der Krieg steckt in seine Jacke rein und wir gehen wieder aufs Eis. Und nach diesem Drittel, plötzlich geht er von der Bank raus und vielleicht muss man übers Eis in die Kabine gehen, stellt sich vor die Salzburger Bank, zieht das Deo aus seiner Jackentasche und versprüht das Deo vor der Salzburger Bank und schreit auf die Bank, ihr seid nur Fußballer, ihr seid nur Fußballer, ihr seid gleich wie die Fußballer. Und ging dann in die Kabine.
Apparently you remember that story.
Oh God. Yes, I do, because they were diving a little bit, right? They're going down way too easy. I said, this is not right. Yeah, I don't remember. We were just playing tough. I mean, hard, a little dirty. I feel like I always had an edge to them. But I remember down, I was in front of the, I got down on one knee. I pulled out the spray and I was spraying the ice as if it was a player. And I said that. And the fan club right behind their bench, they didn't know what the hell I was doing. But then I think they caught on. They started freaking cheering. I got up and I went off. Just another moment in my coaching life. Came out of nowhere. It wasn't planned. It just happens.
Just to get non-German-speaking listeners up to speed, what Markus Kirschbaumer said, a lot of people on Salzburg apparently or presumably dive in you hating it and asking him for a deodorant during
a spray
deodorant right before in a mission. He gave you one in the locker and you approach the Salzburg bench and just sprayed the deodorant all around, labeling or telling them you're just as bad as all the soccer players who flop. You're just as bad as all the soccer players who flop all the time. This is incredible. Well, I didn't know that one.
It's the magic spray, right? You never see the footballer, he goes down, they spray his ankle, he pops up, the broken ankle's better, and off he goes. So I had the magic spray out.
Fill me in on how it feels to go into one off season with that championship elation and heading into another off season where you came oh so close in the finals. How brutal is it to have those two very different emotional settings within just 1 year?
Well, the things that happened, you know, in the finals, and you know, me as a coach, I'm in charge of the ship, so I just felt a little bit sick to my stomach for about a month because, you know, a lot of the guys put everything into this, and I think we were hungry. Stuff just happened, but of course not as exciting, but also another exciting for a year for Phylak Hockey, and we came close again. We lost against a very good team, so you regroup, have to re-sign another one-year contract, which I did, my same progression, and now it's my, which became my last year, the next year, 07-08.
Why was that your last year?
It was my sixth year, so two full half is my sixth year. The team called me in and they said, Greg, before the season was over, we want to re-sign you. I said, guys, contract would have been fine. Everything. Now you work with young guys. We like how you do it. I said, guys, I got to go home and see Taylor play hockey in junior. It's been 6 years. I think it's time. I think they need a new voice. And I remember, too, a couple years before, there was tension in the dressing room. And some of the guys, man, we were headbutting big time. And some of the attitudes I didn't like. I called Raffle and a couple of the guys. I said, meet me at the pizzeria. I'm leaving the team. I'm going to quit. I don't need the bullshit from some of these guys. I called Raff down, a few of the guys. We had a bunch of beers. I said, guys, it's mid-season. I'm going to get out of here because of the attitude of some of the guys. We talked about it. Greg, are you sure? You got a good contract. Why don't you milk this out? So I ended up staying. I said, yeah, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to battle this out. And we were successful again. Probably the finals or whatever it was. Okay, now I'm in this. I said to the team, it's time to go. The players knew. I told the players it was going to be my last year. And here it was. So the players knew. Management knew. The fans knew. So in my last game, just moving ahead, my last game we lost to Salzburg in the playoffs. On February the 21st, 2008, I'm walking across the ice. This is my birthday. What are the chances of this? I kind of get stopped in the middle and the whole arena sang happy birthday. Are you freaking kidding me? Here we go again. Tears in my eyes again. This is freaking emotional stuff. So I left off the ice. What a run I had in Phylak. What a way to end it. The appreciation from the fans. Was I popular at that moment? Yes, I was. And this is coming after a loss. So thank you to the fans, big time.
54 years old at that time, trying to recalibrate priorities, wanted to see your son play hockey, but there are two more coaching stints in the decade that we're talking about. Two very interesting ones, two a couple years apart. The one in Innsbruck that brought you back for half a year during really difficult times for a very good friend of yours, and one in Ritten. But first, how was it to not be doing training camp in August? How was it not to be on the bench come September? How was it to be with your family, to do different stuff?
No, it was good. It was really tight. It was hard to turn down a good contract and stuff. It just felt right. But let me run ahead. 2009, I'm working with the kids and doing my hockey school that also ended right about this time. My hockey school in Summerland, which I ran for 20 years, we put an end to it. It stopped. It was time. 08, 09, I was working with a bunch of kids, having some time off, golfing, working out. I got a call. I had coached before, too, in Penticton, helped coach Robert Dirk with the Bantam team. Curtis Lazar, still an NHL player, was on that team. So I had a good contact from a couple years before. I can't remember what year it was. And they owned Port Alberni in the BCJHL. So around November, they called me and they said, Greg, would you be interested to go down to Port Alberni to help Bryant coach the team and kind of be assistant GM, oversee things? Here's a little contract, go down for 6 weeks. I said, okay, sure. So I went to Vancouver Island. I was doing this and I came back before maybe a week, 8 days before Christmas, because I wanted to spend Christmas with Taylor and I think Mike in Kelowna. I get a call from Hamburg when I was in Port Alberni. And they were interested in signing me in Hamburg. So the GM flew to Vancouver and I went over from the island and met him. And he said, I had all my 10 pages of systems and everything organized. He said, no, Greg, I don't have to see it. You have the job in the DEL, Hamburg. But you have to be there right away before Christmas. And I said, well, I can't get there till after Christmas. So he went with somebody else because I could not get there. So I meet Andy Oakes at the Tim Horton on the west side in Kelowna. And we're going to talk about, he said, would you like to finish the year in Port Alberni? I said, okay, let's talk about contract. Yeah, that works. Okay, can you give me, let me think about this overnight. Martin, I went home, and not 5 hours later, or maybe next day, but within a bunch of hours, I got a phone call. So now I've turned down Hamburg. Ricky Kennedy phoned me. And Ron was not doing good, which was very, very sad. He would have liked me to go into Coach Innsbruck to take over. I was very reluctant. I thought about it. I said, okay, Ron, Ricky, let me talk to Innsbruck, see if I can come up with a contract. I called Port Alberni. I got the deal done in Innsbruck a day or two later. Pretty quick, we got it done with some headbutting. Or, if you don't give me this, I'm not coming. I did tell Andy Oakes, I said, Andy, I can't take the job. I got a call from Innsbruck. I'm going back. He said, Greg, thank you very much. Stay in touch. That's how I got to Innsbruck. I went in basic because of Ron Kennedy. Otherwise, I would not have gone in.
That would have been my question. And speaking about Ron Kennedy, we did a special episode about the life and career and untimely death of Ron Kennedy couple of months ago. I think it happened in May 2023. If you want to listen to the English episode of that, you were on. A lot of friends and family from Ron was on there too. So I hope it's a worthwhile 2 hours listening to one of the great coaches, if not the greatest coach Austria has ever seen. And maybe just quickly touching on it, you taking over for him in Innsbruck. And a little more than half a year later, he passes away. How emotionally straining was that time for you, knowing how good a friend of yours he was?
Well, it was really hard. But here I am trying to coach a team. You know, you're right. Ron was one of the greatest coaches the national team's had, or Austria's had, and if not the greatest. So, but I saw Ron a few times a week. I'd go over and see him and Ricky at their condominium. So, and he came to some of the team functions, but you could see he was going downhill. It was very difficult, but you got to stay positive. You got to stay upbeat. You're trying to coach the team. We're trying to make the playoffs. And that was tough. So when I did my contract with Innsbruck, we sat down when I got there. Okay, I signed my first year. I said, look, a 2-year. No problem. We're going to sign a 2-year. And my second year was a really good contract. But I'm pretty sure they had in the back of their mind they were going to go to the second league. That's why I signed that good one. Irrelevant. We'll move on. We came down to the last 5 games. We have to win, we have to win 4 of the last 6 or 4 of the last 5 to make the playoffs. So we are playing in Fehervar. And after the Fehervar, I think we had 4 games left. We lost 12-0. Murray's the captain. Murray, we had a few good Canadian players, really good guys. So Rem Murray's the leader. And we went after that game. No timeouts, nothing. I said, I don't care if we lose 50-0. Let's just run with this. This was a mess. We were playing in Graz 2 days later. We went upstate in the mountains somewhere, and we had a practice on an outdoor rink. We went on the ice. I didn't say nothing. I did 1 or 2 quick shooting drills just that the goalie's got a couple shots. Pick up the pucks. Called the guys in. I said, guys, it doesn't get more embarrassing than that. Let's get on the goal line. We skated, I think, for 50 minutes stop and starts. And Rem Murray said to your boys, we've earned this. Let's get this done. So a day before the game, we had a freaking real tough bag skate. Really hard. 50 minutes. We go into Graz. We play really good. Gilligan's coach, we lose in overtime on a bad call, which Gilligan even said after Holtze, it was a bad call. Irrelevant. We played really good. Won the next 3 games, got into playoffs to play Klagenfurt.
Again, a series that went back and forth, but you'd be losing out on the eventual champion. Did you always kind of try to follow championships? And was it kind of like a consolation prize to at the very least tell yourself, hey, see, we lost to the eventual champion?
No, we lost in 6 games. Our rink was packed. Theirs was packed. It was emotional, headbutting on the bench. But play, it was like freaking, because I got to show a lot of emotion because that's how I am. And it's got to keep us afloat. We just came up a bit short. They were a very good team. Now, you don't think about we lost to the champs. You want to win. But we took a great team, winning 4 of the last 5 or getting a tie and winning the last 3 to get in the playoffs. You've packed this rink. I said, you guys have earned a lot of high marks for what you achieved this year. And what happened was they went to the second league, which I'm sure was planned. That's the only reason I had that juicy looking contract. But they did offer me a contract the next year in the second league for $26,000, which I said no.
How was your reaction when you found out that they'd moved to the second league?
Didn't bother me at all. The only reason I was going to go back to Innsbruck, where I really did not want to coach, was if I had a good contract. That's all. Business. It's called business. And I can go in there. I can, you know, I got a lot of fans behind me in Innsbruck. I think even to this day, you know, so when I go, I visit my kids, a lot of the older guys, a little bit younger than me. We're all went to the games. I still see them around. We still talk about it. So they haven't forgotten the past of the great times we had in Innsbruck. Could I go back into a situation if the contract is right in Innsbruck? Sure, I could. That's the business part of it. you suck up some of your bad feelings and you get the job done. But it didn't happen, and that was okay. I took 2 years off after that, went back to Kelowna, worked with the school board, with the kids on the ice, really enjoyed myself.
As we're rounding out this conversation, as we've already hit the two-hour mark again in this incredible part number 5 of 77, what did it take for Ritten, which is the only coaching stint after leaving Innsbruck and up until you hitting your 60th birthday that we haven't talked about it yet, what did it take for Ritten to kind of not coax you out of retirement, but get you to Italy?
Well, it kind of coaxed me out a bit. I did have the job in Bochum 1 year. It was after Ron Kennedy. And I had talked to Ron about it. He said, yeah, it's Greg, it's a good deal, but it's, you know, they got some tricky players and some stuff. So I turned down Bochum. So now it's another opportunity to coach in Italy, which wasn't planned. I had 2 years off. Get back in, you know, the finances are getting a little bit tight, so maybe I can get back into coaching for a year, try something new. There was a connection, but I said, Thomas Rottensteiner, who was a really good guy, he was the head guy, I said, Thomas, if you want me to come there, I'm going to fly me in. I want to meet all you guys. We have to sit face to face to see if we are the right mix. So they flew me in. I flew in like for a week, sat down with them eye to eye. We talked about everything. The contract was pretty good, not like what was before, but it was very good for Ritten, for their situation. So I signed. I took a couple of days off after signing. I drove up to Vienna to see Taylor. I hadn't seen him in a while. Actually, I hadn't seen Taylor in 2 years, and that was freaking crazy, which I would never do again. But it worked out. I signed in Ritten. I went there to coach up in a beautiful little city up in the mountains. It was a different experience, but I'm really happy that I did it. We didn't have the success that we wanted. We did stay in the league, but I was so impressed with the home guys. Martin, these home guys had jobs. They spoke, almost every guy spoke three languages. Talk about intelligent, and they worked their butts off and had jobs, and we pushed them hard. But it was a real good experience. It lasted 1 year, and then 2 more years off in Kelowna, and that's the story up to 2014, 15, 16.
We talked about the sixth decade of your being. There's only one left until you're turning 70. That episode will see the day of light this next or upcoming week, as with this episode, which comes out on Wednesday, of course. The next one, the last one, will come out on Wednesday too. If you're trying to digest what happened from age 50 to 60 in your life, what does stand out?
Definitely Bousquet's goal. And let me tell you a little story about Bousquet. When we had, after we won in Villach, we're down at the Rathaus downtown. It is 10,000 pants. It's the party's on. And all the players are up on the stage and talking one after the other. And I had to speak to the fans. And Danny Bousquet took the microphone. And do you know what he said? He said, I finally won. They're not going to call me a loser anymore. What do you think was going through my mind when he said that? I thought exactly the same thing. You think me and Danny Bousquet have a little connection? You're freaking right, we do. That is an absolutely so true a story. All of a sudden, the elephant's off our backs. So, is it tough winning? You're freaking right, it is. But just thinking back, I'm in my pro coaching career. And to make the finals 4 times out of 5 years in Villach is really incredible. And hats off to the players and the fans. They drove, they were our sixth man. I'm so thankful. And I'm so thankful that we won for them. Absolutely Because remember back in Innsbruck, 84-85, we lost in the finals. I felt so bad for the fans. That was my biggest regret. But now being able to deliver with Bousquet's goal in a fantastic season, our third times in the finals in 4 years, to win it at home, what a gift to me, to the players and the fans and the city of Phylac. That's what I remember. I remember a great experience of coaching in Ritten, a lot of excitement. Never forget my last home game at Phylac on my birthday in this decade, February 21st, them singing happy birthday. This stuff just doesn't happen every day. So I'm very appreciative and thankful. Yes, I put time in 24/7, tough times, headbutting with players, almost got fired. Fans love you, fans hate you. But at the end of the day, I think I'm appreciated from the fans because I was never afraid to play the young guys. And I believe that to this day.
Couldn't wish for a better way to round this out. Part number 6 is in the books. One more to go, and then it's the big 70 finally happening, you turning 70 years old. Coach, thank you so much for doing this. Looking forward to having you one last time here on Win Today Hockey O'Clock to do one more part of 17-7 next week.
Martin, thank you very much. I tell you what a great 10 years that was.
Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh. Nice move, another nice move. Oh, it's gone.